Ah, mmm. The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
This is Husker Online, your authority on Nebraska athletics. In this weekly show, the Husker Online team will give you the latest insight on Husker football, basketball, baseball, and of course, recruiting. Now, here's your host, Husker Online publisher, Sean Callahan.
Hello here and welcome again to another edition of the Husker Online show. Sean Callahan, Robin Washett, as we bring you home on Memorial Day weekend. And this used to be, Robin, kind of like my favorite weekend because I felt like nothing ever happened. And it was like,
those days are gone.
The Universal just shut down. Now, to be fair, Nebraska will not host any visitors this weekend. They're going to take this weekend off because they're literally going to host visitors the next 4 weekends in a row. You know, it's going to be crazy. But yeah, it used to be Memorial Day was like, you know what, I'm going to get the Traeger out and just relax. Now, we will go to the pool. We'll get out and do some stuff this weekend with the kids. And you maybe would have Nebraska baseball playing in a conference tournament.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
So we're going to be stuck watching Big Ten baseball without Nebraska in Omaha this weekend.
Yeah, we'll see how much of that I actually watch. But certainly we'll find time to celebrate or enjoy the holiday, I should say.
Enjoy. All right, well, it's still been busy for Nebraska, Robin. They've added 2 new players to this roster. The growing tally is now up to 33 scholarship additions.
That's crazy.
For 2022. And you're like, what does that mean? Well, you have 85. So 32 of your 85 are going to be brand new players on your 85-man chart. It's really remarkable. And Stephon Wynn Jr., from Alabama, the defensive lineman, he committed early in the week, joined his teammate, Kane Williams, the defensive back. So they've got 2 former Alabama guys added. And then later in the week, Marcus Washington, a former Rivals 250 wide receiver out of St. Louis, Trinity Catholic, by the way, no longer open Trinity Catholic. Mm. We've seen a few of those big St. Joseph's in Chicago closed too over the pandemic, but Trinity Catholic closed down, but he went to Texas. Comes with 2 years of eligibility. So Wynn and Washington, 2 additions, 2 years of eligibility. Wynn's a no-brainer to me. Yeah. I think they, like, this is a take no matter what
no
day
doubt.
Of the week.
I like maybe the top position of need or one of the top positions of need.
I think Washington's a little bit more debatable based on the need, based on his production. You know, at Texas, you know what, he played a lot of snaps, 436 snaps, I believe, is what I tracked him at on Pro Football Focus. And had 17 catches. So wasn't like he was on the field a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was on the field more than Omar Manning was last year for Nebraska, which is the most snaps played by a returning Husker wide receiver. But I think there's some other angles on this one, Robin. You got number one, the St. Louis angle. Nebraska's been literally 0-for in St. Louis. The last guy they got was Trey Bryant. It's been that long since they've signed a St. Louis football player. And this is obviously a guy that's big name in St. Louis. His family's connected down there. He knows people. So Kenny Wilhite was involved in that. You had Mickey Joseph, who's now recruiting St. Louis, I think, kind of sign off on it. And he announced his commitment to Nebraska on Tuesday. So they get Marcus Washington added to this mix, and they're going to try to kind of shake out this wide receiver room now.
How much of that, too, did Casey Thompson have a say in that? I mean, obviously, Texas quarterback, Texas wide receiver reunited in Nebraska. Did you think that had any influence in this whatsoever?
Yeah, I do. I think Casey Thompson, just having a guy that he's familiar with on the roster, you know, and he was a big advocate. We haven't seen Casey be a big advocate of too many things on social media so far. And he was retweeting and liking and highly engaging in conversation about Marcus Washington. So, you know, they know each other. They were together for 3 years at the University of Texas. I think the big question now is, look, I think you and I agree, Trey Palmer's the number one guy. He's the featured wideout on this football team. Then that conversation of 2 through 4, you've got probably, you know, you got Omar Manning. You've got Now Washington.
Oliver Martin.
Oliver Martin. Alante Brown. Alante Brown and Isaiah Garcia Castaneda. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of guys that are going to vie for that 2-3-4 in that mix. And then don't forget about the newcomer, particularly Janyron Bonner. I really think he could find a niche role on this team based on what the coaches think of him right now. So the wide receiver position room, they've got what really feels like six veteran guys now, though. I mean, and I do when I look at it now like this, you have a pretty good top six, and that's not even including like Brody Belt, who has a role in this mm-hmm. team.
Yeah, and the coaches have made it clear he is going to play. And
don't shoot the messenger.
Exactly. I know, to the chagrin of some people. But
like, He's a good player.
Yeah, like, he's a good football player. Like
he does his job.
He can do a lot of different things for you. He can help your team. So anyway, that's our Brody Belt feature for the spring. What I want to know is, I mean, for me, going into this offseason, even coming out of the spring, I would have put wide receiver at probably the lowest on the priority list as far as needing to make an addition. Now, obviously, you mentioned the need to, you know, get some good graces back in the St. Louis area, you know, maybe rekindle some relationships there. So there's value in that long term. Obviously, the connection with Casey Thompson, there's value in that to have that inherent chemistry between quarterback and one of your wide receivers. But again, you're already, what are they, 3 over right now? I know that'll all shake itself out, but you know the numbers were already kind of a balancing act, and you're taking a receiver in a receiving core where you already have a lot of numbers, and you also potentially run the risk of maybe creating a little discontent in that room with guys that felt that they were on track to play. Now all of a sudden you're going and bringing in the quarterback's friend from his old school. That's probably going to take snaps away from somebody. So, I mean, are you worried about maybe the cons of this addition, just given the numbers, then given the maybe some of the off the field stuff that might occur?
Yeah, there's always a lot there, because I do look at Marcus Washington as a guy that's going to come with expectations.
Oh, yeah.
And a personality. He's not just going to be a quiet guy. I mean, I think in his relationship with Thompson is going to be big. And will that get him more throws mm-hmm. in situational stuff, you know, where it's kind of a 50-50 type decision? Is he going to get those throws more because of the familiarity with Casey? So it will, that dynamic, yeah, when he gets here. I have not talked to Marcus Washington. He has not returned or responded personally to reporters. So it's hard to know how all this played out, what went into the decision for him to pick Nebraska. I can tell you Purdue told him no. Purdue moved on, and that's coming directly from our good friend Tom Deanhart at Golden Black, that they had moved on, and it was really Nebraska and Utah for Marcus Washington. But yeah, they're at 88 scholarships, and they're 3 over. They're also going to bring in Taylor Lewis on Wednesday. So he will not come in this weekend. He's in Arkansas here late in the week. Then he's already been to Oregon State. He'll tentatively go to Nebraska next Wednesday. Now, the question is, will Arkansas let him leave campus without committing?
Right.
Maybe they'll lock him up before he gets here. I don't know. But, yeah, you ask yourself, why would they take another defensive lineman? And I think some of it might have to do with kind of the guys on the back end. You look at Masai Newsom, Marquise Black, Jalen Weaver. I've heard good things about Roquan Buckley. Mm-hmm. You know, Brody Tagaloa, the unknowns there. They don't have much. I mean, the front end is good for a year, but the reality, Robin, they're going to have to keep taking portal D linemen for the next year or two.
I know. I mean, that's kind of the situation they're in. And I guess right now, you know, you do what you have to do because of how critical this coming season is, and you worry about
surviving
the long-term effects later. But yeah, I mean, at some point, you know, you're going to have to try to establish some traditional depth there, and develop guys as opposed to just getting, you know, 1 or 2 year rentals. And I guess that's a good thing about Wynn. I mean, the fact that he's got 2 years, and so, you know, you at least get some sort of stability there. But, you know, I go back to the Washington thing. You know, we're looking at pros and cons here, all and like disrupting the chemistry of that room. For me, all that matters is if he's good enough and he beats somebody out, so be it. I mean, right now you're at a win at all costs mode for Nebraska and the staff. That if you get a guy out there that you think can make your team better, I mean, you take him, even if it's not a priority position, even if you're running the risk of you know, maybe some drama in the locker room. You know, if he can make your team better, he's going to help you win games. That is all that matters right now, and you worry about all that other stuff later.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk some more Big Ten stuff, the elimination of divisions, and other things happening out there. We'll also talk with Robin on the latest basketball as more of the roster things have come to fruition. And Abby Barmer will join us here later in the show as well with the mailbag. You're listening to the Husker Online Show.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
You're listening to HuskerOnline.com, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
And we're back here on the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Robin Washett. And forgot to mention this, Robin, out of the gates. But before we get to that, I want to make sure the segment is brought to you by the 2022 Aer Lingus College Football Classic in Dublin, Ireland, when Nebraska will take on Northwestern in Aviva Stadium. Robin's going to be there. I'm going to be there. Looking forward to the week of coverage we're going to bring you on Husker Online in Ireland. But you, my friend, can still be with us in Ireland as still time. It is not too late. You heard Brendan Meehan, the commercial director of the game, on with me last week. You can still get on Huskers to Ireland. You can book a package. Plenty of ticket options left. There's lots of airfare things still available. Not too late. So if you want to make this trip out to Dublin, visit HuskersToIreland.com. But the big, like, non-football story of the week, and this is like one of those ones that just kind of organically blew up nationally.
Yes.
Nebraska will no longer be releasing balloons, at least providing
providing the balloons to be released.
For the first touchdown. And that has been a Cornhusker tradition, and I'd like to know when it started. Like, did it start in the 80s, the 70s?
It's been decades. I know that. I think somebody said it like maybe 40 years, something like that.
But this is like Trev Albert's Bill Byrne moment when Bill Byrne tried to like cancel Herbie Husker.
Yes, I remember that.
And then they came back with like a new like revived version that was supposed to be like an in shape.
Yes.
Because they thought Herbie Husker
was like some like dumpy like
fat farmer
stereotype of the farmer. Yeah.
But now like it's cool to have that one on.
Exactly.
Your shirt. I mean
they're rebranding everything with the old Herbie logo.
The retro.
Yes. So
retro's cool, but
figure.
Anyway, the balloons. My question is this. Are they going to allow people to still bring balloons in the stadium? Because if not, why not have like businesses use it as a way to like...
Yeah. I think as long as Nebraska doesn't have to pay for it and they're not going to get yelled at by environmentalists for releasing balloons into the air, you know, it's not their problem. They can't stop people from bringing in balloons. I mean, give me a break.
Like, what's the stop? Like Union Bank or Sand Hills Global or somebody to say, you know what, we're going to have a balloon marketing budget of $10,000 or $20,000 and we're going to provide balloons to keep this tradition going.
We're going to print our logo on them and hand them out to people.
And you might find one of our logos in California when the balloon lands.
Depending on which way the wind's blowing, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that is a very real scenario.
Somebody needs, I mean...
Because there's enough people upset about this that somebody's going to step up and do something.
And this would be your chance to really get some splash, like to be the hero.
Absolutely. The company or the business person that saved the balloon tradition.
And I do need to talk to Steve Rosen. This might be an idea for him in June as a Big Red business. Like, how much money was being spent? How many balloons were being bought?
Like, was the cost of helium really that big of an issue?
Well, most of it comes from Russia. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you, there's still helium because we had a birthday party last week and we had helium balloons in my living room.
Party City is fully stocked on helium.
Yeah. And, you know, you pay a little bit more, just like everything else in the world. So, no balloons. You know, my kids have been to a couple of Husker games now, and that was something they enjoyed, was getting the balloon and releasing.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I get it, and I get also why Nebraska, for whatever reason, you know, just doesn't want to like be the distributor of the balloons. But again, they're not going to like it. It makes no sense for them to like actively stop people from third party sourcing those balloons. I mean, I think that's a really easy solution to this problem.
And, you know, if I'm Trev, if somebody's going to do that, maybe a booster or somebody of substance in the program, you would be wise not to get in the way, because mm-hmm. then you might end up upsetting someone that gives money to the program too.
I think it was Channel 8 put out that clip of the guy getting interviewed. So I think Trev should be fired for this, to be quite honest with you.
I wonder if that guy's on our website.
He probably is.
Is that you, Western Nebraskan?
It's all coming together now.
But transitioning, Robin, let's talk Big Ten schedules and Big Ten media rights. We're going to learn kickoff times on May 26th. So coming up here this week, mm-hmm. So we'll have a better idea, but we don't know the future of the Big Ten scheduling going forward. And I think it's all but a done deal that they're going to eliminate divisions. I don't know what that means, how they're going to do it, but I think the safe money is everyone's going to get at least three locked-in games. The question I have is, three going to be enough to service everybody's trophy games?
Yeah, because there's a lot of them out there. I mean, like Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin themselves have like six different trophies that they play for.
But like wasn't Michigan and Minnesota a trophy game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's like a jug, a pig, an axe. I'm sure I'm missing some things there, but I know there's the old oaken bucket. Yeah, I mean, basically, like, every game has a trophy. Nebraska and Wisconsin have a trophy. Did you know that?
Yeah.
I always forget about it every year when Wisconsin trots it out.
They created the trophy beat Wisconsin. Nebraska beat Wisconsin in 2012.
That was before the trophy was
before invented. The Freedom Trophy.
Yes, yes, that's what it is, the Freedom Trophy. So the Heroes Trophy and the Freedom Trophy.
And then the broken chair.
And then which, for whatever reason, will not be sanctioned by the university. I don't know why.
There is a grassroots group that, like, has worked hard.
That's like one of the coolest trophies out there.
Like every Minnesota game week, I get an email from the grassroots group like to promote, and it's charitable. They give money. Now the Heroes Trophy, I believe it's got a new sponsor too.
Yeah, I think Hy-Vee ditched it.
They're out.
Yeah,
they moved on. I forget who the new sponsor is.
I do too.
But anyway, the divisional talk. Everyone's getting rid of them. Pac-12 got rid of them. Mountain West got rid of them. ACC is getting rid of them.
Yeah.
You think the SEC will get rid of divisions?
I mean, I think eventually everybody's hand is going to be forced on this, because it's going to create the best path to maximize your chances of getting multiple teams into the playoff. I think divisions hinder you just with the way that they're set up. They're going to keep teams...
Geographical divisions.
Yeah, they're going to keep teams with... lessen their chances of playing marquee enough games to make strong enough playoff resumes. And when you eliminate those, you give yourself a broader chance and more opportunities. And even if they start incorporating some of the, you know, different ideas like you were talking about, where like the last couple weeks of the season are maybe like flex games, where they, you know, kind of like the end of the 2020 season, where you pit it based off seedings to give yourself the best marquee matchups to essentially have a built-in semifinal for your conference championship game. So there's a lot of ways they can go about it, but certainly I think that the old model of traditions just it does not work with the current college football playoff model.
You're listening here to the Husker Online Show. And then with television networks, we will know this summer where that's going to go. But I just have a hard time. I wrote this week in our chat that CBS is not... I think they're going to be in this thing. That's just my feeling. CBS lost the SEC. They had the 2:30 window. They were allowed to do two double headers a year where they had a night game as well, two primetime games on CBS. I just have a feel that CBS is going to go all in to get somebody. And if I'm the Big Ten, can ABC even properly service all these leagues and give them enough windows?
Because
they have the SEC now, they have the ACC, they have Big 12, they have Pac-12. Like, if you're the Big Ten, why would you want to be squeezed into that ABC sandwich where you're always going to get pushed out for Georgia or Alabama or Clemson for the better spots? Big noon kickoff, that's a done deal. That's always going to be with the Big Ten. And the Big 12, you know, I wonder about the Big 12, though. Like, how many, when Texas and Oklahoma go, mm-hmm. what's their big noon outlook look like? Because big noon is about big ratings.
Yes.
And
it's like the reverse primetime game.
Yeah. And so we'll, but the big, Fox is going to be involved. Mm-hmm. My biggest question though, is if ABC doesn't take Big Ten games, can the Big Ten still have games on the other ESPN networks? Are they going to be fully off ESPN? Mm-hmm. If you go to CBS and then use Fox, Fox Sports 1, BTN, is that enough? Or do you need still to have ESPN 2 and ESPN as carriers as well?
Yeah, potentially. And
well, then there's CBS Sports Network too, but that just seems like you're really cutting out numbers or ratings.
I agree. It should be, it's notable as of recording time, CBS just claimed the Penn State-Auburn game. So they're already trying to get there.
Well, Penn State Auburn is a SEC.
Would that
game.
Be the SEC title?
Yeah, that's an S. The SEC still has the deal with CBS, and any home game in their stadium is one of their games. So, yeah, the Big Ten thing wouldn't happen until a couple years from now.
Okay.
And that's when the big money comes through for the Big Ten. So, lots to talk about. When we come back, the year in sports is done for Nebraska. It wasn't exactly
what a year it was.
Great year to remember, but we'll recap this year and what 2022/2023 looks like. You're listening here to the Husker Online Show.
You're listening to HuskerOnline.com, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
And we're back here on the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Robin Washett, and the 2021-22 Husker sports year is in the books. And that wraps up the segment.
Yes, and that is.
You know, there was some good things about this year, but you know, I think when you talk about sports years for Nebraska, it's measured by number one football, number two basketball, and football had its worst year in modern day history, almost 100 years, or like the '40s or what, the '30s or whatever it was.
Yeah, since Bill Jennings.
And then obviously, basketball was 13th, right, in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that late surge saved it from being maybe one of the worst seasons ever. So they narrowly escaped it with a miraculous three-game ending to the year. But all in all, it was another disastrous season for Nebraska basketball, a football season filled with groin kick, knife-turning losses at the very end, and then a baseball season that capped it off, that it came in with such high expectations that fell so flat they didn't even make the conference tournament.
Well, everything with football, though, like every metric about this team, other than wins and losses, show that they should have won.
It's like a Mike Riley. If you take away the final score.
Yeah, all that matters is wins and losses. But if you just look at like metrics and numbers and data, this was a team that should have won 7 or 8 games minimum. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who truly beat the crap out of Nebraska? Not Ohio State, not Michigan. Not Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. I mean, they played some damn good teams.
Michigan State,
no. I mean, Nebraska held them to no first downs in the second half of that entire football game, and they lost the game, which I bet you if you studied 1,000 football games, that's never happened before.
No.
Ever.
No, and that's what made them such an anomaly. Like the analytics guys like that dive into that really stuff, like we're just fascinated with how Nebraska could be 3-9, but all the metrics suggest they were such a better team than that.
One, what the most maddening thing was, like, probably the three most thorough beatings were against teams that you thought Nebraska should have always beaten. Mm-hmm. Illinois, Purdue, and Minnesota. Illinois, Nebraska made that a one-score game. I believe it was 8 points, right?
Yes, 30-22.
But that they jumped up big on Nebraska on that little run, and then they made the Purdue game interesting late. But Purdue dominated and executed at such a high level. I mean, they ran, you know, they didn't have any big plays, but it was like every throw was a perfect 6-7 yard throw.
Death by 1,000 paper cuts.
And Minnesota stuck it to Nebraska. I mean, Nebraska scored late, I believe.
Yeah.
Game to make it one score.
Yeah, it was 30-23.
But that was a 2-score game late, and Nebraska scored a cheap one late. Mm-hmm. But those were like the three worst losses where, you know, then you had good losses, and then you had shake your head losses. Iowa would be a shake your head loss.
Absolutely.
21-3 lead.
Absolutely.
Was it 21-3?
Yes. So Iowa won 28-21, and that was because
a safety.
Yes, they have a block punt or something like that.
Well, they blocked a punt and scored a touchdown.
Yes.
So yeah, everything that you could have thought of went wrong. But yeah, outlook now going forward. I mean, on the women's side, a great year. I mean, volleyball.
Women's basketball.
Women's basketball made the tournament.
Softball.
Softball made the tournament. So you had three of your top women's sports all succeed. Gymnastics. Mm-hmm. Men's gymnastics had a good year. Mm-hmm. They were in the final group. Now, men's, I think there's only like 18 gymnastics teams for men's, but Nebraska was in the top five of that.
Right.
Wrestling. You know, Mark Manning's team had a really good year in wrestling this year.
Yeah, they had a disappointing finish, though. I know that. Like at Big Tens, they did not do as well as they hoped.
So, yeah, there were a lot of positive things, but all we talk about is football.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and football was really set the tone for the entire year, really, for on the men's side, where you know, they should have been much better than they were, and then that basketball carried right over, and there were such high expectations with you know, this heralded roster that Fred Hoiberg was able to put together, and then they go out and lose their season opener to Western Illinois, and that just got the whole season off to a negative foot, and it never got any better until the very end when it was far too little too late. So, I mean, and then baseball, you know, kind of like I said, being the real unexpected cherry on top there, where, you know, they were coming off a conference championship and were that bad this year. Like, that's almost as inexplicable as anything.
And from what we're hearing, you know, there's going to be 10 or 12 defections from that roster. I mean, yeah. Will Bolt, Lance Harville and his crew, Jeff Christie, there's going to be a big turnover of roster on baseball, and that's coming. And some of it's already gotten out. Who is it? Leighton Banjoff.
Yeah, Banjoff.
Already announced. And there's a few others. And I don't want to we've heard names, but we haven't confirmed them with the people themselves. But you're going to see 10, 12 defections from that baseball roster. Robert, I do want to hit on over-unders, though. They came out on Vegas Insider. In the Big Ten West, Wisconsin's number one with 8.5. Nebraska's at 7.5. Iowa's at 7.5. Minnesota's at 6.5. They didn't have a Purdue one, but I would imagine Purdue somewhere at 6.5 or 7.5-ish, too. Mm-hmm. But the Big Ten West is like a grab bag right now.
Absolutely. And so, like, we're doing our you know, Big Ten opponent spring review, whatever, and, like, every West Division writer I've talked about says there's no reason they can't compete for the West because the West is wide open. And so, you know, if Nebraska somehow figures out a way to play up to their metrics and not lose in devastating fashion at the very end, there's no reason they can't be in that conversation as well. I mean, let's not act like the West is full of these like titan teams. I mean, there's a bunch of, for the most part, above average to good teams in the division that Nebraska, going into this state, this point of Frost tenure, should be right in the mix of that conversation. So, you know, that puts a lot of intrigue into this year, to where last year was really bad just with the win-loss record. But if you believe that they truly were better than that record and they actually play up to that this year with all the new additions, the instant impact players they brought in, you know, that increases the level of optimism certainly more than what you thought it would be coming out of November.
You're listening here to the Husker Alliance show as we talk over-unders. And, you know, one thing about Nebraska, I think there's a lot of people asking themselves, how can a three-win team have a 7.5 over and half win total right now?
Yeah.
And a lot of that is the schedule. You look at Nebraska's first nine games on that schedule, they only play one team with an over-under higher than 6.5, and that's Oklahoma, who's at 9.5. So theoretically, based on Nebraska's over-under win total, they only see one team in their first nine that has a higher over-under win total than Nebraska. So it is set up. I mean, if it doesn't happen this year for Scott Frost, it's just not meant to be at that point, because there's never been a more favorable schedule, and we'll talk about this till I'm blue in the face. They got to win the Ireland game against Northwestern. That's
yes,
the key to the season.
Just like last year.
I don't want to be sitting on a plane for 8 hours flying home
yeah.
after a loss with a bunch of Husker fans.
Well, I mean,
that would be a long trip back.
Yes, it absolutely would. And then you got to get right back up and play a game against North Dakota that nobody's going to be fired up about. And then you beat North Dakota and Georgia Southern, you're the exact same situation you were a year ago, where you're 2-1 going at Oklahoma and no one really is all that fired up about you.
Whereas, no one believes in you.
Yeah, if you're 3-0, then that changes things.
When you almost could be, I don't want to say ranked, but you could be.
You'd be in the conversation. You mean a 3-0 team with a conference win? I mean, and nobody knows what Northwestern's going to be this year. So, I mean, that it's very much on the table for Nebraska to finally, for the first time in a long time, get off to a hot start. And early season momentum is so critical. We've seen it when time and again when they don't have it, it just gets your whole season off to an awful foot. But if you can actually start a year by winning three straight games for the first time under Scott Frost, going into that Oklahoma game, you get it at home. That's probably gonna be a nationally televised game. Like, there's a huge opportunity there that going into that bye week, you could have some major momentum with an opportunity to not only clinch a bowl berth, but put yourself in interesting position going into those final four games, Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, that might change your perception on what this season could ultimately be.
And nobody should say we're overhyping by saying Nebraska should be 3-0. They're going to be double-digit favorites in their first three games. They're 10.5 right now in Northwestern, 10.5. And that's the team they blew out over everybody last year on their schedule. And I get it. Northwestern's silly. They're
a weird team.
They do weird things and figure it out sometimes.
If you go by their calendar, I think they won the Big Ten West in 18, and then they won three games in 19. They won the Big Ten West in 20, and then they won three games in 21. So if you go by that clock, they should be the favorites to win the division. So depending on how much stock you put into that.
All right, we'll take your questions next in the mailbag with Abby Barmore. You're listening to the Husker Online Show.
This is HuskerOnline.com, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
And we're back here on this Husker Online show, bringing you home on this Memorial Day weekend. Hope everyone's enjoying their extended time off with family as we remember those who have fallen. But it's time now for the mailbag. Husker Online's Abby Barmore joining us here in studio. Abby, what do you have to lead us off with?
Who are your projected starters for the defense given all the transfers?
Well, I mean, there's a lot there because we don't really know like the full makeup of the scheme, like what they're going to do as far as odd and even. Yeah, and like
what do you list Garrett Nelson as?
He's a
D end.
Is he a D end
or is he a linebacker? And
is Caleb and Tanner going to be on the field together? We know that, but could you have Garrett, O'Shawn and Caleb Tanner on the field at one time? Yeah. I mean, so I think that's the question. I mean, we know Ty Robinson's going to be a starter in the middle somewhere. That interior spot with him, would it be Devin Drew? Would it be Stephon Wynn? Is it a 50-50 deal with those types of guys? And then there's still a chance they can get the junior college player here too. So there's a lot there. Linebacker, we know Heinrich and Reimer will be there, and Tanner should be there. On the back end of the secondary, the two safeties now are Buford and
Farmer,
and then you'll have Quentin Newsom and Tommy Hill at corner. And then I think the backup group is still pretty fluid. I mean, I don't know if you can just definitively say these are the backups.
Mm-hmm. Like, where does Kane Williams fit in, you know, and does his situation alter like what a guy like Marcus Buford does? And so, like, there's all sorts of different variables here. But one thing that kind of stemmed from our chat was the Ty Robinson conversation. You still have him in ink as a starter?
Ty Robinson?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even with the new additions?
Yes.
Like, you don't think Wynn could unseat him?
No.
Okay.
Ty Robinson, to me, is like the leader of the defense.
The only reason I say that was because you look at his Pro Football Focus grades, and he was vastly the worst, like, without question, of all that top group, like, greater than, like, the 40s. So, like, and his snaps went down towards the end of last year. I was just curious if there was anything to read into the way last season ended with the additions they brought in this offseason, if that signified anything as far as his role.
No, I think Ty Robinson's a guy and a starter. And I think, if anything, they just need to have more pieces around him. You can't have Ty Robinson play 50 snaps, 60 snaps. He's got to be, you know, around 40.
I think towards the end of the year, there's games where he was in like the 20s.
And a lot of it depends on the looks and the schemes, but no, I'll bet you a steak dinner he's a starter right now.
All right.
If you want to take me on that bet.
All right.
So you're saying you don't think Ty Robinson's a starter?
I was just asking the question.
All right.
I was not taking a stance. Either way, all I know is that they brought in some big names at that position, and his numbers last year suggest that, I don't know, he's in that sure thing discussion.
All right, Abby, what's next?
In regards to the transfer portal this year, name your favorite Husker get, one you wish the Huskers got, and one you're glad the Huskers avoided.
My favorite get is O'Shawn Mathis.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
Close second would be Trey Palmer. And as far as wish they would have gotten, the quarterback from Fresno State, was the guy. Jake Haner, former Washington Husky that transferred. He had 4,000 yards passing last year, and there were deep conversations. I mean, it was fairly far along with the 23-year-old Haner, and he's a double transfer, so it wasn't a guarantee. So that's one, to me, he would have been, if they got him, they probably wouldn't have, they maybe would have taken Chubba Purdy still, but he was the original quarterback Frost wanted. And what was the third part of that again, Abby?
One you're glad they didn't get.
Glad they didn't get.
I think we both said in the chat, Spencer Rattler.
Yeah, Spencer. Well, all because the Iowa Western quarterback that went to Iowa State tweeted that. And people actually believed that Spencer Rattler was on a visit at Nebraska.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, there are a lot of people that were very high on him. And from a talent standpoint, I get it. I just don't think there was a lot else there that would have done Nebraska much good. There's a lot that comes with Spencer Rattler. I'll say that.
What do you got next?
What's your take on Nebraska not providing the red balloons next season?
Well, we talked about this in the previous segment. I really think as long as they're allowed in the stadium, there's going to be somebody that steps up to the plate and figures out how to have balloons still.
Yeah, I don't really care. Like, I get it as a tradition, and it's cool. Like, when you're in the stadium and, like, they score that first touchdown, especially when, like, it's a big game against a quasi-rival, and then they release the balloons, and it's that kind of, like, heavy fall air where they just kind of hover around the stadium for a while. It's a cool scene, and it's a cool tradition. You know, I guess I'm sure there's logistics behind not doing it, so I guess I understand, but I don't think their balloons are going away, and I think in the end this is kind of a moot conversation that is creating something to talk about in May.
Trev Albert said that they would try, they're working with the marketing team to do something different to keep the red balloons tradition alive. So what are some ideas that could keep that going?
I know they do, like with basketball, they do the phone app thing. Oh, yeah. To where like you hold your phone up with your app open and it lights up. So maybe
that's
like
too high tech.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, it's cool when it works. They made it work at basketball games, but that's 15,000 people. Yeah,
I mean, trying to get like 90. Bill and Betty from Hastings to download the app and do
my flip phone doesn't have that. I mean,
it's just not gonna work, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one thing that came to mind. Maybe you pass out like pom-poms or something like that that you can shake, because I know like Penn State does that and it looks super cool. I don't know. I'm sure there's things you can do, but again, the balloons, it was Nebraska's thing, and that's why people are so opinionated on it one way or the other.
This is Trev Albert's Herbie Husker, Bill Byrne moment.
Exactly.
And we saw how that Bill Byrne had to bring back Herbie in a different way. But all right, Abby, what do you have next?
We talked about the projected starters on defense, but let's dive in a little bit to the linebackers. The inside linebacker room seems a little thin with the injuries, especially if these guys can't come back. So how is that group going to shake out, especially with those injuries right now?
So I got a little intel on that. We know who the top three pretty much are today.
Right.
Reimer, Henrich, Snodgrass. But keep your eyes on the freshman Ernest Hausman from Columbus, Nebraska. Little birdie told me that we should probably be including him in the discussion, because Barrett Rude and the program are very high on this kid.
So, I mean, like, would you put him over Maua Clements right now? Because he got a lot of talk this spring.
I think you know what you have in Maua Clements. He's been here a long time, and this kid has a better body, a better frame, and more upside. So that's how coaches generally go. They go for the upside versus, like, what you know you have. So I think they're really excited about him. Clements would be the guy tentatively based on like what you know now, but I think long term, by the middle of the year or as the year moves on, it could be Hausman.
Hausman, yeah. So, and another thing to keep in mind with this is, yeah, Reimer and Henrich have kind of gone through their injuries, but they also played the third and fourth most snaps of any defensive player last season. They were both well over 700. So while they might be a little nicked up here and there, they're about as durable as it gets at that position. So they hopefully will not need to go too far down that depth chart this season.
All right, Abby, we have time for one more question.
What was your favorite all-time Nebraska football game?
All-time that you attended in person.
Okay. Attended in person, you can't say the national title games if you went to those.
Well, I went to the Rose Bowl. That would not rank up there. but the the 94 Nebraska-Colorado game for me was one of my all-time favorites. I was a student in high school, or eighth grade, and my dad had two tickets in the south end zone, and everybody wanted to go to that game. I mean, it was College Game Day. It was an 11 a.m. game, ABC. It was basically like a 2-3 or 1-1. I mean, it was almost a 1-2 type game. And so my dad got me a ticket, but I sat in the student section by myself as like an eighth grade kid. Mm-hmm. God bless the 80s and the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
To send your kid to sit by themselves at a Husker game.
Different world.
But yeah, I sat in the student section as an eighth grade kid by myself and watched that game. And my other real favorite game was the 05 Alamo Bowl. Were mm-hmm. you there, Robin?
I was there.
And just that Michigan.
I was there, walking around on the field while the play was still going on. They were still trying to tackle the lateral to not lose the game in the most epic fashion possible.
And, you know, at the time, it wasn't a high-profile bowl game. It was like 8-4 versus mm-hmm. like 8-4 or something. 7-5. I don't know what Michigan's record was. But you had Mike Tirico with Kirk Herbstreit. And was Aaron Andrews on the sidelines?
Possibly.
I mean, it was like a Super Bowl broadcast team calling the Alamo Bowl. And sold out in the dome, all Nebraska fans mainly, but Michigan they were so much more talented than Nebraska. Yeah,
they had multiple NFL guys.
I mean, it was like an NFL team, and Nebraska was like, you had like Adam Ickes like putting his shoulder back in place to go out and cover kicks, and
Corey Ross had the game of his life.
Blake Tiki just flying down and like, you know, with no respect for his life, just jumping in the air at Steve Breston. I mean, there were just like moments like, man, this is Nebraska football, like small town Nebraska type guys not giving a you know what, mm-hmm. taking down first rounders, and Zach Taylor just getting smoked, and they won that game.
Yeah, for me, it's got to be the 01 Nebraska Oklahoma game, just because that was the last time Nebraska was really there at the pinnacle.
That was a good game.
Winning that game, I mean, that was like, I mean, as far as like games that I've been to, by far the most meaningful game. But there's other like moments, like the, what was it, 08 Colorado game where they blocked the field, Henry hit the field goal, and then Sue took back the interception or whatever for the touchdown. Like that game was awesome just from like being there, like that, the decibel level that crowd reached on those two things was insane. And then someone brought up a good one on the board, the 14 Miami game.
Oh, that was great.
Just from like how different the vibe was in Memorial Stadium than any other game I've experienced. Like the level of hostility was the highest it's ever been, or at least that I've
ever
seen.
People stayed there till the very end.
Yeah, people were out for blood. And like that was like a totally different, they weren't clapping for their opponent. They hated Miami. And they made it clear they hated Miami from the very
And the Randy Gregory almost warm-ups. Got in that fight.
Yeah,
Gregory and like was everybody
awesome.
Was like,
Abdullah was a beast. God, that game was awesome.
Abdullah ran his, I mean,
he did.
Oh my God. I mean, that was an incredible, and under the lights, where when we went to Miami, unfortunately, that was like a mid-afternoon game.
2,000 degrees.
It was so hot.
Miserable.
I mean, we were just sweating at that game, maybe from the night before a little bit too, in South Beach.
A little sauna action.
But yeah, Abby, show your age and tell our listeners what your most memorable Nebraska game is that you've attended in person.
Mine was the 2016 Oregon game.
Oh, that was a good one.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I was at that one. It was like the 350th sellout.
Yeah.
They won, like they stopped them, like the
Oregon
last
kept
3 minutes
for two
they
and
scored.
Missing.
Yeah, yeah, they had a big defensive stop at the end.
What year were you born again?
98.
Okay.
So yeah, I was not really alive for any of the.
You missed out on a lot of the heyday
the
there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, when we come back, we'll close the show. Updated some roster news on basketball and more. You're listening to the Husker Online Show.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The Nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the Nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
This is HuskerOnline.com, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
Final segment here of the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Robin Washett. Been a fun show here on this Memorial Day weekend edition. As let me tell you, Robin, month of June is going to be pretty crazy. And we'll talk more about that next week.
Yes.
A little tease, but
yes,
we'll have some announcements maybe of some sort next week on the show. So
stay tuned.
Stay tuned for June 1. When we drop our next show of the Husker Online show, we might have a new guest on the show with us too. Somebody else,
man,
that might get your interest.
Bart Scott can't wait.
So make sure you tune in and are logged on to HuskerOnline.com, as we'll have plenty of things going on here in the next week. But I want to talk basketball, Robin. We're kind of closing the book on things. Our friend Lat Mayen officially has moved on. He's back in Australia. Man, Lat Mayen, by the way, that guy has traveled the world.
He really has. Born in South Sudan, grew up in Australia, went to TCU, and then to Florida, to Chipola Junior College, and then to Lincoln. Now he's back in Australia, so he is a very worldly young man.
I asked him, I go, "What kind? You've been everywhere. Like, what kind of food do you actually like?" Because that guy, I mean, literally, like, he's had, like, every type of food in the world where he's lived, all these places. But yeah, he's moved on, and that's not a surprise.
No, knew that was coming for a long time now. In fact, I mean, it was kind of one of those deals where, like, it was already just a assumed deal that didn't even really check into it until I saw on Twitter some writers in Australia were talking about his debut in his first professional game. I was like, oh, well, he's playing pro. I'm assuming he's gone officially, and so I was able to confirm that and officially close the book on the Lat Mayen era at Nebraska. So, as a result, that leaves the one last quote-unquote unknown on Nebraska's roster being Trey McGowans. He's in the same situation as Lat, where he potentially could come back for another season with the COVID year. He's still going through the pre-draft process. He's in Las Vegas training with his brother. He was actually just out in Chicago with Bryce during the combine and participated in the Rock Nation sports agency pro day that they had there. So he's still going all in on the professional ranks. And I've reached out to him a couple times, just asked for an update. No response yet. So basically, it's one of those deals where, for one, Nebraska doesn't have a scholarship for him. Right now, with Trey technically still on board, they're at 14 of their 13 allotted scholarships. So someone would have to leave for him to come back. And then also, he has June 1. That's the deadline for the NCAA early entry withdrawal deadline. So that will kind of clear things up. So if he is going to stay in the draft, that's the cutoff there. So there's I guess technically still some time for this to play out, but you can basically chalk it up as Trey McGowans has played his last game as a Husker. They're moving on without him, especially when you take into account last week's news where they just took a guard from the transfer portal in Emmanuel Bandamel, who does a lot of the same things Trey McGowans does as far as being an elite level on-ball defender and another scoring option on the perimeter. So that all being said, it appears that the roster is in place. It's just a formality of when the Trey McGowans news is going to come down and become official. But look at the scholarship number. It's a different looking group than what we've seen under Fred Hoiberg. And what I mean by that is they didn't go after a lot of the highest profile transfers, or they did, but they didn't get them. But the guys they brought in all kind of checked the same boxes where they're older. They've won a lot of basketball games in their career. They've played a lot of college basketball games in their career, and they're vocal leaders. I think every one of those guys, between Sam Griesel, Emmanuel Bandamel, and Juwan Gary, all bring kind of a different intangible to this roster that Nebraska's really been lacking. They haven't had guys willing to step up and say the things that are needed to be said, or at least not enough of them. Now you have those three with Derek Walker, with CJ Wilcher, with I didn't throw Cron McPherson in that as far as being a legitimate vocal leader. So there's a different dynamic with this group where on paper, it's hard to say they're as talented, maybe even as last year's team was going into the season, but they might be better equipped to survive in the Big Ten with just the defensive-oriented nature of the roster and then the veteran presence that they have and then the leadership that they have. So if nothing else, it should be a different looking group than what we've seen the last 3 years, which based on the last 3 years, that was something that absolutely needed to happen.
You're listening here to the Husker Online Show. When you talk about just like point distribution, Robin, do you just envision kind of a bunch of like 10 to 13 point guys in there?
Yeah,
I mean, there's not going to be the 18 or 17 guy that, but that's a good thing. I mean, because in some ways, the last couple of years at times, it felt like Bryce got maybe extra shots that could have helped other guys.
Yeah, I mean, you go down the line, and there's been guys.
Teddy Allen.
Taking way too many shots, and the ball sticks. And for Fred's system to work, the ball can't stick. And so, yeah, I agree. I think that they have a bunch of guys that could be in that 8 to 12 range, and that might not be a bad thing. That's the big question right now, is who will be that go-to scorer? Because they missed on Antonio Reeves. They missed on Baylor Shireman. And so those are the two kind of go-to scorers they were trying to get through the portal. They didn't get them, and so they kind of heel pivot and get Emmanuel Bandamel, who averaged 10 points a game last year and, you know, shot like a respectable 35% from three-point range. So, like, scoring is not his MO. And you could say the same thing with Sam Griesel and with Juwan Gary. None of those guys were elite-level scorers, and so who's going to be that go-to guy? That remains to be seen. And that is by far the biggest question right now. But like I said, they were able to supplement in other areas where they should be a much better defensive team. They should be a much better rim protecting team. They should be a much better rebounding team just with the roster that they have in place and the makeup of it. So that's why I say there's intrigue here. I mean, there's not a lot to get excited about, but it should be a different looking team, and we'll see what that means as far as their competitiveness in the Big Ten.
All right. Well, lots to keep up with on the site. As we mentioned, recruiting's going to get crazy. None this weekend as far as visitors go, but starting June 3rd, every weekend through June, it's going to be nuts. So make sure you're on Husker Online. Also, some big stuff being announced, and you'll want to be with us here on the show next week as well as on HuskerOnline.com.
Thanks again for joining us this week on Husker Online, your authority on Nebraska athletics.